All right, everyone, welcome to the next episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I am not Travis Hornsby. I am Rob Burtman, a consultant here at Student Loan Planner, and I have with me today Lauren Williams and Dan Rooker, two of our other awesome consultants. Hey, guys.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Rob.
All right. So today we're going to talk about 5 steps to spend money again post-pandemic, because like a lot of you, we're all just like itching to get out there, get back to, you know, whatever normal life means these days. But we want to make sure that, you know, we are being responsible and we're helping you kind of think about some things so that as you're bringing your spending back, that it's not going to sabotage the financial goals that you have set for yourself. It's not going to sabotage your student loan plan. But we do want to make sure that you're able to live the life that you want to live too. So we're going to talk about the 5 steps today. And so aside from us being consultants, we actually each have our own independent companies that we work for too. So mine is Family Budget Expert, where I help clients with their budgets, families with their budgets. Lauren, you want to tell us a little bit about Worth Winning?
Yeah, at Worth Winning, we help young professionals organize their finances. So, you know, you name it, you need help with it, we help you. So if that's like, hey, we just got married and we're trying to figure out how to merge our finances, or I just got a raise, I got a bonus, I've got stock options, I don't know if I'm investing right. What is the 401k? How do I do that thing? You name it, pretty much all things financial planning, we help young professionals with.
Awesome. And Dan, tell us about the newly formed Rook Financial.
Yeah, this so my practice, I formed it just earlier this year, went live last week. Rook Financial is similar to Lauren's business in that I work with early career professionals. I focus on healthcare. So folks who have student debt and are early on in their career, and like I'm sure a lot of clients that Lauren works with, they end up getting ignored by the larger financial planning firms that need you to have a certain amount of money in order to talk to you. And so we charge in a way that allows us to offer qualified advice to people who are in the early on in their career.
Awesome. Yeah. And the reason I want to bring this up is not only so you get to know us better, but also that you know that we're not just some schmoes who don't know anything about personal finance. You know, we've lived it. It's our careers, even outside of student loans, which we spend, you know, a good amount of time. We also, you know, help people. And I'm like the old fogey. I just reached, guys, my 20-year college graduation anniversary. I've been out of college for 20 years.
This is 20 years for high school for me this year. So
Yeah. I'm at 25 for high school. So, you know, it's just kind of surreal to think about all the things that, you know, we've all seen, you know, through the late 90s, through the Great Recession in 2008. And we've had another recession / pandemic. And the idea is that we have to remember the lessons that we've learned financially, and also so that we don't repeat them again, so that we're even better set up when the next recession comes, because there'll be another one coming. We don't know why or the circumstances, but we don't want to stop living our lives either. So let's jump into step number one of this. And step number one, in terms of the 5 steps to bring your spending back post-pandemic, is to reflect on how things have been going during the pandemic. What does your pandemic spending look like? So just a brief overview. Everyone started saving a bunch of money in April of 2020. I think according to the St. Louis Fed, you know, the average savings rate in, I think, February of 2020 was 8%. And in April, right in the middle of the pandemic and everything, it jumped to 33%. So people really cut back their spending. Now, what are some of the things that Lauren and Dan, that you saw that either you personally cut back on or some of the things that you've seen your clients cut back on during the pandemic?
You know, personally, I think it was an opportunity to save for my wife, Katsi, and I, and we took full advantage of it. We were blessed. We were lucky to be employed both in industries that just happened to be resilient during the pandemic. I certainly don't take that for granted. But for me personally, I started saving to start Rook Financial. And my wife, Katsi, used it as an opportunity to pay off her grad school loans. She's a PA. And because of COVID, there was a need for people at the hospital here in Chicago. And she picked up a bunch of extra shifts. And it was emotionally taxing, but it was financially rewarding because there was a purpose for that money and a purpose for that saving. And so that's what we did personally. I think a lot of my friends did the same thing in terms of just spending less because there was less to do. When you're in a city pre-pandemic in a place like Chicago, a lot of what you do has to do with going out to places. And that just pre-pandemic had to do with, I guess, we were all under the assumption that you had to spend money to go do things, and found out from the pandemic that that's not necessarily the case.
Right. Absolutely. What about you, Lauren?
Well, for me, if you've listened to previous podcasts, you will know that I am a travel enthusiast. So I've built totally my financial plan around my ability to be able to travel and, you know, not waiting till later to be able to do those things. And well, the pandemic came and my goal was to do 6 new countries and 6 new cities in 2020. I made it to 2 new countries and I think 2 new cities. So hence to say, yeah, without traveling, that kind of reworked my budget, being at home quite a bit more. And I was in that bucket of people who were able to save significantly more. Another part, if you've listened to some previous podcasts, is that I'm on a 3-year plan to FIRE. So I've kind of figured out my FIRE numbers and now I'm saving aggressively, realized that like, oh, I can actually do this. It wasn't because it was like a goal or aspiration of mine my whole life. But as I started to learn more about it, I was like, what would it be like to really be financially free? So my goal is 3 years, I'd be 40 and I'll be celebrating my 40th birthday and also being on FIRE. But I want to say that on the other side of that, you know, a lot of people did get to save a lot more. And that's been, you know, one narrative. We know that the pandemic hit a lot of people really hard. And I've also seen people that have been on the other side of either, you know, not being able to save because of circumstances changed, or what I got quite a bit of customers coming in for me were people who knew they should be saving and weren't. So they had way less expenses. Things should have gone down, but they found themselves in the same kind of boat every month. And they felt as they were reflecting on like, okay, all my friends are saying they're saving a lot more. Their expenses have gone down. Why am I still paycheck to paycheck every month? You know, it's a lot of it was stress related, you know, eating out a lot more or ordering in a lot more, not eating out, but they replaced some of the expenses they weren't able to do by going out, by doing things inside and weren't actually able to save in the way that they wanted to. And that's the reason they reached out to get help. So there's definitely two buckets there.
Yeah. From the budget standpoint, since I help people exclusively with their budgets, I saw that obviously, you know, food spending, dining out type of food spending or ordering in food spending actually came way down. But grocery bills went up. You know, my personal grocery bill went up probably about 20%, but our dining out budget, you know, spending went down. Obviously, travel, a lot of that went by the wayside. People like to go to movies or, you know, go see shows. That wasn't an opportunity. So, but you bring up good points. A lot of people that had to cut their spending was either because they didn't have a choice because they couldn't spend the money in the ways that they normally do, or it was because they had a drop in income and they really had to pare back. I would say one of the silver linings of this, like, why are we reflecting on, I think it's important to understand like where we've come from. We've been in this pandemic for 12, 14 months now, and it's important to understand the things that have changed in our lives. And the good thing that I've seen is that people finally realize, you know, it's like when I was working with clients in 2019 and before, they would say like, I don't even know where I can cut my spending. Like, I don't even know where to even start. Well, the pandemic kind of forced people to say, oh, I can do this. I actually can spend less money if I really wanted to. Then we talk about not only reflecting on the things that we're not spending as much money on or the things that we really went down into, what did you miss? If we're going to bring back spending, we don't need to bring back all the spending that went by the wayside. We should only bring back the stuff that's important to us. So talking about what we miss most. So like my wife, we're now officially fully vaccinated, like 2 weeks out from our second doses. So we're good to go. Yeah, it's exciting. It's kind of, I don't even know what to think about it. It feels just weird. But anyway, so, you know, we want to get someone to come in and clean up our house because we've been doing it on our own. Our kids have been involved. My wife got her first massage, you know, that she's used to get massage like once or twice a month. And that's something that she really wanted to do. And she's going out to lunch with coworkers safely with vaccinated coworkers and everything like that. So that's, and obviously travel, you know, these are some of the things that we're wanting to bring back. But some of the other stuff, we're just like, we don't need to spend money on that anymore. So Lauren and Dan, what about you two? What are some of the things that you're looking forward to bringing back? I guess maybe another way to put it, what did you miss the most during this pandemic period that you'd like to bring back?
Mine's an easy one. It's travel. Get me on a plane to somewhere quick. I'm really looking forward to being able to leave the country. You know, I've been a little bit slow to do, I know there's some places you can travel, but I've been slow to do so because there's still restrictions in place. And so it's like, you don't want to go on a vacation and then be trapped in your hotel, which sounds like some of the places are pretty much limiting you to things like that. I'm very much an experienced person. So I'm looking forward to travel, but also being able to experience things when I travel.
Awesome. What about you, Dan?
You know, pre-pandemic, when I did at my previous firm, I worked, we had two offices, one down in the Loop in Chicago, and then one out in the Burbs. And I'd work down in the Loop 3 or 4 days a week. And every time I would go down there, I would try to schedule ahead lunch with friends that also worked a few blocks away that I could walk to. And I just, I don't know, like Never Eat Alone. I think that's a book. I just like, that's been a mindset for me. It always has been. Someone told me when I first graduated from college that I should do that. And I've been doing that for the past 8-ish years. And I got used to that. It was like my social out for the day. If I did nothing else social, if I had gotten lunch with someone, whether it was, even if I brought, sometimes I would bring my lunch and then go bring it to a place where we could sit down outside downtown. It didn't always involve like buying lunch out, but whatever it was, I just didn't like to eat alone. And it was nice to do something that where the conversation was not about work and it was just, how are things going? And it was a way to catch up without having to schedule a dinner with my wife and their significant other to meet up. I mean, it's just, even without kids, it's tough to get on four people's calendars if they're all working. So lunch was a perfect out. I really miss doing that and looking forward to getting back to that.
Very cool. Yeah. So that's step one of the process of bringing back your spending is, you know, just reflect on how your spending has changed over the pandemic. Think about the things that you missed the most that you want to bring back, but also think about the stuff that you've really figured out your spending went down and you don't miss it and do not bring that back, right? Because we want to take this as an opportunity as incomes come back up and things open back up to make sure that we're spending on the things that really, really matter to us, not just on the stuff that we don't really care about in the first place. So step two is to, you know, think about how has your life perspective changed through all this? You know, what new things do you want to bring into your life now that things are opening back up? Do you want to focus more on your health? You know, do you want to spend more money on strengthening your relationship with your family members, spouse, friends? Are you thinking about making a career or job change? Are you looking to really take advantage of when things come back up to get yourself into a better financial position? So think about the things that you want to, that you weren't doing before the pandemic, and what are the things that you want to add into your life maybe for the first time or emphasize? So yeah, Dan, maybe tell us kind of what you're thinking there.
Kind of, I guess, piggybacking off of my last comment, my craving to be social has not changed, but the medium for how to be social has been influenced by the pandemic for sure. Previously, maybe I thought in order to grab a drink with someone, we needed to go to a bar to happy hour, or in order to grab lunch, a lot of the time they expected to be able to go to lunch and buy lunch somewhere. I think now it's common to say, let's grab a drink. And that means a socially distanced drink at home on the balcony at the back of an apartment or something outside. Or it might just be, I mean, recently I had a friend that I hadn't seen in a few months come by and we went on a walk with my dog and that was our social time to catch up. And it was fantastic. We did all the same things that we would have done over a drink at a bar during happy hour.
Great. What about you, Lauren?
I would say as it pertains to updated goals, I mean, I've kind of curbed slightly my travel appetite. So you're always going to get travel as a theme for me. But being at home, yeah, with the dog, with my husband, et cetera, has been really nice. And I think we kind of got a new groove of like what it's like to be around more often. And yeah, they always say like distance makes the heart grow stronger or fonder, whatever, however it goes. But yeah, I'm actually more open to like, you know, learning about the city that I live in. And I don't think I've done a really good job. I've been in Dallas now for 7 years and we don't have a real strong network. So I'm more passionate about building that network and interacting with people. We've, you know, made some new friends, like you said, gone to some of these different events. And I'm looking forward to leaning into that and maybe, like I said, slightly curbing the travel. Still want to go places though.
Yeah, I mean, you both bring up some good points about how I think we've all realized that we don't have to spend a lot of money to get the experience that we want out of life. And so as you're listening to this podcast, think about that. Like, what can you add back into your life? What are the things that you can, you know, if you want to be more social, if you want to do some more exciting things, exploring just in your backyard, right? You know, for my wife and I, we started taking walks by ourselves because it's, you know, we have 3 kids. They're 11, 9, and 4. So it gets kind of loud and boisterous here. And we're kind of nervous to leave the kids at home, even just walking around the neighborhood. But once we started doing it, that time was like super valuable. So we don't necessarily need to go out on a date and spend $50, $100 on dinner. We can just like take a nice 45-minute walk together around the neighborhood. Even with kids, we don't have to pay for a babysitter or anything. We loop and do stuff. So like we're always walking by the house in case they need something. You know, health is something that I've definitely taken more seriously. I would say like something else is that I was getting kind of burned out with shuffling the kids all over the place for activities and school stuff and all that stuff kind of ended. And I now I kind of miss it, where before I thought it was like a little bit of a hassle. that's something that I want to recommit to, is making sure that I'm more excited for the kids' activities and to do some more things in my life that are more social. Because I got a little antisocial even before the pandemic, but now I'm really missing it.
Yeah, I think you bring up such a good point too about being able to travel nearby. So like leaving your home and going for a walk. One of the things that Will and I did was road trips. You know, Texas is a really big state, lots to see, lots to do. And we could just go an hour, 2 hours, be somewhere that looks like a totally different terrain. We Airbnb'd some really nice like lake houses and very affordable in comparison to two flights to somewhere. And like I said, when I'm thinking, I'm always thinking international, but there's a great big America out there that, you know, a lot of us haven't seen. So we're committing kind of to doing that more.
So I grew up in Ohio where there wasn't much going on. There's nothing geographically or, you know, I mean, I'm from Canton, so the Pro Football Hall of Fame is there, which is exciting. But once you go there once, that's it. So I used to take a lot of road trips because I thought I never really traveled internationally until really well after college. But what I tried to do was like take the opportunity to just like drive around the Pacific Northwest, you know, the North, the South, the Southwest. And that's what I would do. And this country, there's so much that the country has to offer geographically and culturally that it's great to get out and see that for sure. You know, we've seen this in a bunch of recessions. One thing that maybe when you're thinking about a pandemic perspective shift or updated goals, I think it's really important to really make sure and understand that something like this is going to happen again. And so one of our goals should be making sure that we get ourselves to greater financial stability. So whether that's building up an emergency fund, whether it's paying off debt more aggressively, whether it's putting more money away for investing purposes, we really can take the opportunity to add those as some of our goals when we want to bring that kind of stuff back too. So now we've talked about step one and step two. So reflecting on what your spending looked like before and after and what you want to bring back, thinking about adding in new things or updating things that you weren't doing before that you want to do now that this has kind of shifted your perspective. So now step three is to really understand where you're at. So step three is review your spending. And this is something that, to me, this is a number one. Anyone who wants to do anything financially, like they need to review their spending. You don't have to necessarily set a budget even to start. And I know me as like the budget guy, like when I say you don't have to create a budget, it sounds kind of weird. But the first step is honestly just reviewing your spending, tracking where your money's going. So let's talk a little bit about why that's important and what you two have seen in your businesses and your financial careers of why the spending piece and understanding that is really so important to financial success.
Yeah, I would say one of the things I always ask my clients is, does your spending align with your values? And they're like, what? And so we got to do a little bit of the groundwork to, you know, even unpack what that means. So understanding what your values are. I would say even before you review your spending, write down some things that you think are important to you. What are your values? What do you stand for? You know, how do you want your life to look? And then take that look at your spending. Because if you say, I really, really value family and I love movies or something like that, I'm a movie buff or something, and then you look at your spending and 50% of your spending is going to a house and you want to travel all the time. Well, actually, I switched the total examples on you. But yeah, if you're saying like, hey, I want to travel all the time and then 50% of your income is going to housing, and you know, you just said your value was travel, but here it is, you know, something that's really restricting your budget is this thing. Or to go back to where I was, you're saying it's family and a lot of your spending is oriented toward being out with friends or you're doing a lot of work, you know, maybe that causes you to kind of say like, whoa, I'm doing a lot of, you know, networking or these things for my business or for the work that I'm in. And I'd really like to realign those dollars back toward spending more time with my family. So really getting an understanding is the whole review your spending kind of aspect for me is like, what am I actually doing versus what I want to be doing?
When I think about spending, it's very similar to the values idea. I'd say it's the same. I call it on my side, purposeful spending. And personally, how I relate to it is I'm purpose-driven. If there is a goal assigned to it, then I was more motivated to accomplish that goal. 2020 for me with health, things kind of fell off. And for 2021, I signed up to do the swim portion of the Chicago Triathlon for a relay. And I swam in college, so it won't be too bad, but that's given me a purpose for exercising every day, getting on the indoor bike, getting into the pool eventually when things open up a little more. On the financial side, I think with purpose and purposeful spending, I relate to it in that when we moved into this place that we live in today, what was important to us was being able to host friends. And that kind of got turned onto its head because of the pandemic. We moved in and then the pandemic happened not even 2 weeks later. And this place is great to host and terrible to working when another person is there. So we've adjusted and we've adapted and then we renewed our lease. So we'll be here for another year. And hopefully over the next year, we get to host a lot of friends in this 2-floor loft and have a lot of fun. But it happens to be our budget is something along the lines of it used to be when we both had jobs, we lived on one salary and saved the other salary. And then within that budget, over half of that budget went to rent. So that may seem like a high amount of the budget going to living, but that's just because our budget was pretty low to begin with. So we focused on that. And I think maybe in future years, it flips and maybe housing is a really small part of the budget and a larger part of the budget goes to travel. Because I haven't experienced the travel bug like Lauren has, but I want to.
Well, you get outdoors quite a bit, right? You do a lot of skiing, snowboarding, swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dan's like our superhero action person who does like all the cool outdoor sports and stuff.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah. I would say like reviewing spending is important. And when I work with clients on the budget side, I say, okay, this is the meeting we're going to go over your spending. Most of them say, I'm really dreading looking at where my money's gone. But once we actually take a look at it, there's actually an empowerment that comes from understanding where your money's going. Because then you know, are we saving? Is our money going towards, like you both said, like what we care about, what our values and everything is? You don't know until you look at the money. And what happens is a lot of people, they try to make changes with their spending or their budget, but they just pull these numbers out of the air. Like, for example, pre-pandemic, let's just say that someone wanted to cut their food budget down to $800 a month. Okay. If they reviewed their spending and they know they're spending $1,000 a month on food, then that's achievable. But if they're spending $2,000 a month on food and they say they want to get down to $800, that is an enormous habit change that they need to implement. So before setting a budget, before understanding, you know, what you want to bring back and what things you want to add to your life, you need to know, like, what room do I have for this stuff? And that only comes from reviewing spending. So the number one habit that I always tell people is forget about budgeting, forget about investing, forget about any of your other goals. Like, just look at where your money is going in the first place. Once they have that awareness, then you know where you're at and you can make adjustments. So that leads us to number four, which is now that you know where your spending is going and you know what you want to bring back, it's time to make room for it. Maybe if you were in a fortunate position that your income stayed the same, but your spending went way down, you can just bring some of that spending back up and just, you know, you're saving less money. But even so, we still need to be intentional and make room for what's important to us. And also remember, from a student loan standpoint, remember that payments are starting back up as of now in October. So for those of you who have had the relief from student loan payments because you have federal student loans held by the Department of Ed, that's something you got to make room for. That's not the most fun thing to think about, but it is something that we have to account for. Now, when we talk about making room, what we're really talking about is cutting back on the spending that doesn't really serve us well. And I know, Lauren and Dan, that you both talked a little bit about looking at and making sure your spending is in accordance with your values. But what are some of your best tips or philosophy on cutting spending if someone's trying to like reduce their spending in their budget?
I would say talk about it. It's important to tell someone else, either someone that you feel you can talk to in confidence, who's not going to blab about it to your friends. And it could be a significant other. It could just be a really close friend. It could be your parents, but talk to somebody about what you're planning to do. And you don't have to let them in on the whole picture. But if your goal is to cut spending on restaurants because your food budget is reasonable on the grocery side, but it's just enormous on the restaurant side, because either you can't help yourself from ordering on Uber Eats or whatever it may be, talk to someone else about it and tell them that you're planning to do X. And you do that often enough, you're reinforcing this mindset to maybe reduce the number of times that you order on Uber Eats. This is not, and hopefully Uber doesn't come after me for saying this, but we make a lot of decisions impulsively. So if you can train your mind to act against those impulses, then at least for some things, you can reduce your spending.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Dan. Finding that accountability partner and, like I said, write it down, make it real is what I always say. And then also speak it out loud, because it goes from something like, ooh, I want to change my financial life, and you have that in your head, or I'm going to start saving this month. And it's, you know, you never make it real. As soon as you said it out loud, it becomes something that is more tangible to you, even if you said it out loud in a room by yourself. But it definitely makes it a lot more real when you say it to a friend, because they're likely, even if you don't ask them specifically to be your accountability partner, they're likely to check in with you as just like a conversation point. How are you doing with your debt pay down? You know, how's it been going with, you know, not getting your nails done every month? They're just going to hold you accountable by simply having a regular conversation piece because you told them about it. And the other thing I would say too is, like, to circle back to this idea of like what's important, movement is not the same thing as achievement. And so sometimes what we do is, I'm going to start doing these things and I'm going to get really busy so that I can do these things. And before we know it, we're just busy doing things instead of actually moving with what we're trying to accomplish. So moving in accordance with something that we're trying to accomplish. So if this is the goal, what are the 5 steps to get to the goal? And make sure that your actions are very thoughtful toward that. Because there's so many times I can tell you where people, you know, say like, I'm busy, you know, I'm grinding, I'm thugging it out. There's all these different terms and phrases. You know, they say entrepreneurs are the people who are willing to work 80 hours a week so we don't have to work 40 hours for someone else. All of that only goes so far before you have to take a step back and say, hey, what's really important to me? What did I say I was out here to accomplish? And what are the things I actually need to do to accomplish that versus just being busy?
Yeah, for sure. You both bring up a good point that I didn't think about before, but there's this guy, his name is Jim Rohn. And for those of you who don't know, he's sort of like a pre-Tony Robbins. He was a motivational speaker. And for those of you who don't know who Tony Robbins is.
Pre-Tony Robbins?
Yeah. Yeah. Jim Rohn's been around for a while, but he says, you know, basically you are who you surround yourself with. And so if you are looking to, and this goes back to pandemic, you know, there could be some friends that they're like, hey, things are opening back up. You want to hang out? And you could say, eh, maybe you weren't such a positive influence on my life. Because ultimately the goals that you want to achieve and who you want to become is highly dependent upon who you surround yourself with. So if you want to step up your game and like hang out with people who are more financially responsible or taking their finances more seriously, taking their health more seriously, then try to spend more time with those people. Money management and budgeting and time management are very kind of similar concepts, right? Where it's like where you spend your time, you want to spend your time where you value it. But at the same time, you know, like when we're talking about spending, if I just ask a client to say, hey, do me a favor, just you got to cut your spending by 10%. Go for it. Most people would have absolutely no idea where to start. They usually go, they look at the pie chart, you know, this much going to housing, this much going to food, and they'll go category by category, try to cut 10% across the board. But the technique that I use, I call it keep, cut back, eliminate. And what you do is you take a look at your spending, you review your spending first, and then you say, what are the things that we want to keep? And a keep is something that you want to continue to spend 100% of the dollars that you're spending there in that area. So it's not only do you love where you're spending the money, but you like the amount you feel like is a good amount. And think about this in the 3 different buckets, depending on, you know, if you're single, married, or married with kids or have kids, that you want to think about it in 3 circles. You as an individual, you as a couple, if you're attached, and you as a family, if you have kids. What you do is you need to earmark keeps in each of those categories. Because what a lot of times people do is they'll neglect one. Like when people have kids, they're just focused on family spending. They're not focused on individual spending. And most couples aren't looking at like, what can we do? What experiences can we have? Where can we spend money together that will strengthen our relationship? So when we look at keeps, we want to look at keeps in those 3 buckets. You're not going to change spending there. These are the things that you want to keep. So then the cutbacks are things that you're looking to make a 20 to 25% reduction in. So think about someone who is going out to lunch 5 days a week and they say, I want to do better with my food spending. Most people, they'll try to like brown bag it every day and like they'll go from going out with their friends every day to like going down to 0. And it's just unsustainable, right? Like the first day they do a good job. The second day, a coworker or friend says, hey, you want to grab lunch? And they say, sure. And then Wednesday comes around and they're like, well, I already ate out once, so I messed up my goal. So the cutback is a way to take the edge off. And if you just go out to lunch, for example, 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week, you're saving 20% on your lunch budget right there. So that's kind of what a cutback is. And if you're attached to someone financially, that's someone that something that you have to agree on is your cutbacks. Eliminates are things that you're spending money on that they have no value in your life. They're not in line at all with anything that you're doing. Maybe they're even detrimental or sabotaging what you're trying to accomplish with your life. And those are 100% ramp downs. So if you think about your spending and how to make room for what's important, you want to, first of all, keep what's important there. And then in order to make room for stuff like new financial goals, you know, new health goals, whatever the case may be, look at cutting back and eliminating the things that as you review your spending aren't as important to you. And another thing that we could talk about from a student loan standpoint is that if you do decide like too much is going to fixed expenses, too much is going to your debt, and you want to make it a little bit easier to do some of your other goals, that you can always look at refinancing. If you have private student loans, you know, you could look at refinancing them to a longer term. I just had a client I was working with that they had credit card debt and they were not able to save on a monthly basis. Like their fixed expenses were too high, but their mortgage was on a 15-year. And so they actually refinanced to a 30-year, got a lower interest rate so that that gave them some breathing room to reach some of their other financial goals. Then once they get rid of the credit card debt and other stuff, then they can go back to putting that extra money in the house to pay it off faster. So you might have to slow down in some areas in order to speed up getting out of like the toxic financial stuff that's in your life right now. So that's just something else you can think about. And if you do have private loans that you're looking to refinance just to get a lower interest rate or extend the term to make things more manageable for you, studentloanplanner.com/refi. We have some of the best cashback bonuses out there if that's something you're looking for. Okay, so that's step four, make room for what's important. Finally, step number five is we want to continue to spend responsibly as income comes back up. So whether your income was severely affected or not, people have a tendency, as both you know, Dan and Lauren, like when they start to make more money, they start to spend more money. It's like you get a $1,000 bonus and all of a sudden you buy a new car, a new $30,000 car. So we've gotten tax refunds. You know, people who have kids are going to get the child tax credit coming in at the second half of the year. Maybe, you know, you're able to take on more hours at your work, or maybe your job can increase your salary now. So what are some good tips, you know, Lauren, let's start with you maybe, of like how to spend responsibly as your income comes up?
Yeah. So one of the things I always encourage clients to do is like as income kind of starts to grow, you start swooping some of that out of the way immediately. So instead of allowing your lifestyle to creep up, it's like if there's an extra, you know, $1,000 a month coming home, oh, wow, this is a great opportunity. Let me at least automatically save 500 of it. So I'm going to put some of that money aside and then I can decide, you know, do I really need to increase my lifestyle the other $500 a month? So I think it's really important to be intentional instead of to just see the paycheck get bigger and kind of keep living life and realizing that the money gets gone into the black hole as things kind of come up and life starts to happen. The other thing is, I always say when you know that there's an income increase coming back in, like you said, we know that, you know, this your raise comes at this point at every year, or you know that you're getting ready to get a new job, to hit the pause button immediately and kind of think about, well, what goals do I have? Where am I in relationship to those goals? If there's some things that I have not been doing as much as I wanted to, how can I get on track for those things? So retirement is a big one. A lot of people kind of say, I'm saving something for retirement. I'm going to do it because that's what the grownups do. But then all of a sudden it creeps up on you and you don't have enough saved. And now, you know, you hear a number like you got to save $3,000 a month if you want to retire and keep this lifestyle. And it gets really daunting. If you can hit that pause button and say, what am I doing all this for again? I'm going to get to a point where I don't want to work anymore, or I physically can't work anymore. And I don't want to be a burden to, you know, my family or others. And therefore, I need to get ready for this thing and do a quick projection. How much do I need to save if I want to retire by 55? How much do I need to save if I want to retire by 65? I know a lot of people sometimes say like, well, I'm just not going to retire. Like, I don't see that as a thing. You know, I don't know how that works. I want to work always and keep myself busy. But if you simply hit the pause button and say, what do I really want going forward? When that new money starts to come in, you can say, okay, I've already put half of it aside, but can I put a little bit more of it aside? And what is the purpose? You know, not just, you know, stockpiling away to stockpile it, but to really allocate it as you stockpile it away.
To add on to that, I think it's important to have a long-term focus and find a way to put yourself on a trajectory towards a long-term goal. And then it's important to enjoy the ride along the way as well. When I think about purposeful spending, I'll bring up a couple bird analogies. It's sort of like when you assign, like say, you know, you're getting a raise or you're getting a bonus. I like to use the third, a third, a third rule where, you know, just assume a third's going to taxes and then a third is going towards expanding your lifestyle. You should enjoy that bonus. You've worked hard for it. And then a third is going to go hopefully to, I would say a third to taxes, a third to saving, and a third to having a little more fun, whatever that fun definition is for you. When you do that, you're assigning a purpose to the money. And purposeful spending is not like counting your chickens before they hatch. It's closer to getting your ducks in a row. And then once you get your ducks in a row every year, act like an ostrich with its head in the sand and just keep doing that. And that'll help you reach that, get on that trajectory towards your long-term goal.
Yeah, that's all great. I think similar to what you both talked about is I have a rule, I call it the 50-50 rule. A lot of people think I'm saving 10% of my income, and as their income grows, they continue to save 10% of every extra dollar that they save. But honestly, if you look at the projections, 10% savings rate is not enough over the long term. So the 50-50 rule works similar to what both of you were saying, but you take half of it and add it, at least half of it, and add it to what you would do to grow your balance sheet. So whether it's paying down debt, building savings, investing, you add it to what you're currently doing. So let's say you're putting $1,000 a month and you get an extra $1,000 a month of take-home pay. Take 500, bump your savings from $1,000 a month to 1,500. And let's just say you were spending $7,000 a month. Well, feel free to bump your spending from 7,000 to 7,500 a month. So you're saving an extra 6,000 and you're spending an extra 6,000. Not only are you saving more on a dollar amount, but your savings rate, which we know is critically important to financial success, goes up too. So you could go from saving 10% to 15% to 20% as your income grows. So 50-50 rule, similar to the third, a third, a third. And just like what you were saying, I think a lot of times what people do is they feel like they have to do all or none, right? Again, this all or none thinking really causes people to get in trouble. They make mistakes. So then they feel like a failure. Then they don't get back on, as opposed to you can do both. You can live a better life. I don't want to say better life, but you can spend more money and you can save more money at the same time with these increases. So I think that's really, really important to think about that 50-50 rule, or that what Lauren and Dan, you both talked about as spending comes back up.
I was just thinking, Rob, that my third, a third, a third is probably easy to think about if you know that you're having like a $10,000 bonus. I'm just throwing a number out there, a $10,000 bonus, but probably the 50-50 rule is easier to think about when you know the dollar amount that's going to land in your checking account, because then payroll's figured out taxes for you. Payroll's not figured out for us. We have to figure that out. But if you're W-2 employed, whatever comes in the checking account, that's the other two thirds of that third, a third, a third. And that's the same exact thing as that 50-50 rule.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And tax refund is the same way, right? So if you pay too much in taxes, you get a tax refund of $3,000. You can spend $1,500 of it and then just save the other $1,500 of it. There's one other concept that I want everyone to think about as their income comes back up. It's a concept I call payment stacking, but it's basically like, I can afford the monthly payment, so I'm going to bring this back. They start going into more and more debt. They buy a nicer car. They buy, put something on a payment plan. They buy a new iPhone. And what happens is you go into, oh, I can afford that. Oh, I can afford $80 a month. I can afford an extra $50 a month. I can afford an extra $200 a month. All of a sudden you've taken out, you know, I think the average family has $70,000 of debt outside of their mortgage, and they're paying about $1,100 a month towards that $70,000 of debt. So when you're looking to buy things as your income goes up, don't look at the monthly payment, look at the total cost of what you're buying. With AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, and they're saying, oh, you can get this new iPhone, it's only $40 a month, but it's a $1,000 phone. You're not spending $40 a month, you're spending $1,000. And is that something that you want to do with your income as it goes up? So I would say avoid payment stacking by looking at the total cost. That's something else to think about.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I think that that's the reason a lot of our clients reach out to us, is that they become aware of this kind of payment stacking on the student loan side of things. So it's like, I can afford the $200 a month that is my income-based repayment or income-driven repayment, but I'm watching my balance grow. For some of the other things you said, like a car or a mortgage or something like that, you're not seeing that because, you know, those debts will eventually get paid off. Whereas with student loan, it is a similar form of like, like I have a very affordable monthly payment, but this debt is doing this thing and it's kind of freaking me out. So the awareness that people have that caused them to reach out to student loan planner is a result of, you know, a kind of a form of payment stacking, if you will. And I'm not saying don't use an income driven plan. We highly recommend them for those that it is appropriate for, but it is similar in the way that we, you know, sometimes can kind of, oh, I can afford this. And you add these additional debts of all these different things you can afford on a monthly basis. But it's also about, like you said, reallotting those dollars. So after you do a consultation with us, you know, maybe you were paying $1,000 a month in student loans, and we get it down to $200 for you. You know, that's $800 that you can redirect into retirement savings or something like that. So,
for sure. That's a great point. That's a great point. So these are the five steps, and I'll just recap them. So number one is reflect on pandemic spending. Number two is, what new updated goals do you want to bring into your life because of the pandemic? Number three is review your spending. Don't start with a budget. Start by looking at your spending first. Step four is make room for what's important by cutting out the things that you don't care about so you can bring in the stuff in your life that you do care about. As your income goes up, step five, spend responsibly as your income rises. So that's the five steps. Lauren or Dan, any final like tips on post-pandemic spending that either of you wanted to throw out there as we wrap up the podcast here?
I would say as you are, you know, a lot of our listeners have student debt, and as you're paying down, and maybe other kinds of debt, consumer debt of some kind, as you are paying down debt, if your path that's best for you is paying down that debt to zero, then just be careful about debt fatigue. I think it's a real thing. It's important to celebrate your many successes along the way and not just wait until that very end, light at the end of the tunnel to celebrate. So if you're on a path where you're paying off smaller loans, as you pay off each loan, you don't have to spend a ton of money to celebrate, but do find a way to memorialize paying that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to follow you, Dan, with that same kind of like final thought is this idea we just talked about, the third, a third, a third, the 50-50, all these different things. You know, ultimately what that all adds up to is that you can do many things. And so often people think they can only do one. I'm trying to pay down debt, so every single dollar extra I have has to go toward debt. And that's not true at all. You can pay extra towards your debt, go out a little bit or do something for yourself, and also save. Like I always tell people, don't ever sacrifice savings to be paying down debt. You have to put something aside for yourself. Maybe your savings rate goes down while you're attacking debt, but it doesn't go completely away, because what happens if you have an emergency? You have no emergency fund in that case. So big, big deal not to get that debt fatigue. And because you're not going to get the fatigue because you have dollars that are allotted for other things, even if you're kind of prioritizing debt repayment.
Great points. And I would just say in closing too, since this is the Student Loan Planner podcast, is that if you're uncertain of what your payments are going to look like, or if you're not sure if you're on the optimal plan and you want to make sure you know what to expect when your payments start back up in October, go to studentloanplanner.com/help, book a consult with us. It'll be either be Dan, Lauren, myself, maybe Travis, maybe Megan, maybe Molly. All of us want to make sure that when October comes around, that you know what to expect and that you can build that in to your post-pandemic spending plan. So any uncertainty at all, set up a plan, takes 1 hour, and we'll get you all the answers you need. So hopefully this helps you kind of like get excited about spending post-pandemic and helps you get prepared so that you can do it responsibly and feel like you can live your life while also being financially responsible. And so thanks for joining us today. And Dan and Lauren, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Lauren.